coming up on New York Now, the state's Medicaid director addresses the U.S. Senate's attempt to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act.
They could basically destroy America's healthcare system. And that, to me, as I say, is the ultimate cop-out. If you're going to do something as big as this, then at least have the guts to actually develop the replacement as opposed to taking a vote of this kind.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union, and we're coming to you from the heart of what the President of the United States calls Upper New York.
We'll try to define that later on with Karen DeWitt. First up today, though, as we preview, New York State Medicaid Director Jason Helgerson sat down in studio with our Karen DeWitt to discuss the hottest political topic in Washington this week, healthcare, specifically the Senate's attempt to repeal Obamacare.
Jason Helgerson, welcome back to New York Now.
Thank you.
We're here to talk about the potential effects of what's going on in the federal government with the ACA, also known as Obamacare. But I wanted to start with some good news first, because I think in a lot of people's opinion, there just hasn't been a lot of good news about this lately. In New York State, the healthcare exchanges that were set up under Obamacare, they're doing pretty well, right?
Yeah, Obamacare's been a tremendous success for New York. We cut the uninsured rate in half. Millions of New Yorkers now have healthcare that didn't have it before. Some of them hadn't had it for 5-10 years. And so tremendous number of really great stories about people accessing healthcare services for the first time and how it's changed their lives.
Now, how many insurers are on the exchange? We hear about some states where some areas don't have any or they only have one. Does New York have a lot?
Yes. New York has more insurers available in markets all across our state than virtually any other state in the country. We have quite a few choices. I mean, it varies a little bit by part of the state, but every state has more than one, or every part of the state has more than one choice. But in certain, particularly in our cities and more urbanized areas, there could be a half dozen to almost 10 choices in markets.
I also read that the rates have actually gone down this year by 4%. Granted, we still have among the highest priced insurance premiums in the nation, but they went down from last year, which is unusual. And what do you attribute that to?
So first off, Obamacare created competition in New York that really hadn't been available in the past. It also brought tax credits, subsidies to help bring down premiums, to make it more affordable, which brought new people to health insurance, including younger, healthier people. So we have a much more robust health insurance market today. And as a result, you see that in lower premiums. And so in New York is probably one of the great successes of Obamacare. When we launched back in 2014, premiums for individuals in the market went down by half.
But as we're talking, the U.S. Senate is poised to move on either repealing and replacing Obamacare, simply repealing it, replacing it later, or really who knows what at this point. So I wanted to go over some of those scenarios with you and how they would affect New York. First, repeal and replace. The House and Senate have bills. They're slightly different, but it would largely affect New York's Medicaid program, right? Because it was greatly expanded under Obamacare, and it could blow a multi-billion dollar hole in the state budget, correct, if these things become law?
Absolutely. Whether it's the House or the Senate version, it's basically two flavors, but of the same overall theme, which is, in essence, taking health insurance away from millions of New Yorkers. Our estimate is 2.7 million New Yorkers will lose health insurance under virtually either version of the bill. And under both bills, billions of dollars are lost. At its full impact, $8 to $9 billion less revenue from the federal government on an annual basis.
Per year.
Per year.
That's of $130 billion budget, but that's still a big hole.
Oh, it's a massive hole. It's a massive hole that no tax increase could ever fill, and that's why it would mean massive cuts in access to health insurance for millions of New Yorkers.
Well, that's the question. I mean, the choices are cut services to New Yorkers, politically unpopular, cut the price that you pay to providers, which could cause its own problems, or a really big tax increase. So, I mean, you got to be looking at those choices. What do you do?
And that's it creates that really Hobbesian choice, right, where there is no good option. And states all across this country are going to be left with these difficult choices. And I think one of the untold stories of all of this is that states all across our country are going to be facing the potential of either offering health insurance to people who need it or raising taxes to levels that are just unsustainable, or frankly facing bankruptcy, like we're seeing in Illinois, in Puerto Rico, and other places, that is going to become more the norm across this country, which would be absolutely terrible, obviously, for our nation.
But New York wouldn't face bankruptcy, right? I mean, we have enough money. It would just have to come from something else.
New York is one of the wealthier states in the country, so we have bigger shoulders upon which to deal with this. But at the same time, the impact of $8 to $9 billion of less federal money into our system, it's almost impossible to imagine a scenario where that doesn't hurt real people.
Because where do you take it from? You've got education, which is a big part of the budget, and then you mostly have the state agencies, which there hasn't been that much spending on them. They're kind of bare bones right now anyway, right?
And on Medicaid, we now spend, thanks to Governor Cuomo's efforts, we spend less on a per-person basis in Medicaid than we spent in the year 2000. So we've made this program, cut billions of dollars out of it, made it more efficient. So it's going to be all the more difficult to try to take billions more out of this in terms of ways that doesn't hurt real people.
Okay, the other scenario, just repeal Obamacare and not immediately replace it. That means that New York's Medicaid money, we get to keep that for a few more years. But others have said that puts the insurance industry into a death spiral. And how does that play out?
This is the ultimate cop-out for this United States Senate, for the Congress, for the president, to basically say, we, after 7 years of saying that this bill should be, this law should be repealed, that they can't coalesce around a plan to replace it, and talk about basically creating a massive degree of uncertainty, basically throwing millions of Americans out there into the world where they have no idea where their health care is going to be available and what form it's going to take. And insurers will, in the face of that uncertainty, drop out of this market. And as a result, even without having actually done anything, with no impact from the law, they could basically destroy America's healthcare system. And that, to me, as I say, is the ultimate cop-out. If you're going to do something as big as this, then at least have the guts to actually develop the replacement as opposed to taking a vote of this kind.
So there'd be no individual mandate requirement anymore, but you'd still have to, insurance companies would still have to cover things like pre-existing conditions,
right?
And I mean, you know, how can they function? I mean, they're for-profit, you know, companies, they got to pay their employees, right? And they got to function. It just seems like there's no way that they can function under those circumstances.
And that's why, in the irony of all of this, whether it's the Senate, the House, or just the flat-out repeal and delay strategy, that is why everyone in the healthcare world of the United States is opposed to this bill. You can't find a single person who wears a white coat who thinks this is a good idea. You can't find a single health insurance executive who thinks any of this is good for the health insurance industry. This is all bad. This is all negative. And that is why I find it so sad and frustrating that this is the debate that we're having here in the United States today.
So go over one other scenario that's been mentioned by President Trump. When he was frustrated that Congress wasn't doing anything, he said, well, just let Obamacare fail. Now, how does he have the power to do that?
Well, at the end of the day, the president should be, under the Constitution, the administrator of the laws of the land in the United States. Unfortunately, there's clearly opportunities within how they administer the laws to do things that are detrimental to the best interests of Americans. And if they decide to pursue some of those strategies to begin to try to destroy the American healthcare system through fiat, then fortunately they have some powers to be able to make that happen.
So specifically, what are those powers that they could do? Would it be not enforcing the individual mandate by telling the IRS you don't have to penalize people who don't buy insurance? Is that
Or else they could cut off the flow of cost-sharing reductions, payments that go to insurers to make health insurance more affordable for millions of Americans. They could take those monies and say, you know, we're not going to pay those monies anymore. There are multiple ways that they, in essence, could destroy our health insurance market. And my fear is that if they can't get it through the Congress, that they may try to do it administratively.
And also, it's been said that they could badmouth it to death, essentially, right? Because that's already kind of happening on the...
Another possible tactic that they could use to basically destroy healthcare.
Okay, before everybody gets really depressed here, there's just really no good scenario out of these three, right? I mean, is there anything good that can come of these that you can see?
This isn't about healthcare. This is about tax cuts for rich people and corporations. This is about trying to basically tell, I argue, 40 to 50% of American people who don't have access to health insurance through their employer or are not super wealthy. It tells those people who may have one or two jobs, barely sort of able to meet the needs of their families, who have school debt, credit card debt, have real challenges in their lives, but they happen to work for employers that don't offer health insurance. It tells those people that, guess what? you're on your own. Pick yourself up by your own bootstraps. Find a different job. Find an employer who'll pay for your health insurance. That is really what this is about. It's about telling that group of Americans, millions of them, that at the end of the day, they're not worthy of the government helping them, not whether it's affordability or protections from insurers who are going to use all this flexibility to make it harder and harder for them to get the basic services that they need. Ultimately, at the end of the day, my fear out of all this is we're going to create a healthcare system that, in essence, is much like Governor Mario Cuomo talked about in the 1980s, a tale of two cities. We'll have one healthcare system for wealthy people who can go out and access the those state-of-the-art services that can and save lives, improve lives, and then the rest of us who are going to be stuck with a tier two system that actually doesn't meet the needs and denies access to life-sustaining treatments.
Well, New York does have some protections that Governor Cuomo did under executive order, that you'd have to keep the 10 essential benefits under Obamacare. The insurance companies would have to do that, which include reproductive services, I believe, right? Maternity, mental health. Do those offer any help, even if the healthcare system, the ACA, kind of blows up under this?
Only if you can afford it. It's great to have those protections, and we have a strong progressive tradition, but ultimately, at the end of the day, the question will be, will New Yorkers be able to afford the insurance that's available in the marketplace? And my concern is when you take away those tax credits, when you take away the funding for Medicaid, you're going to be telling all those Americans and all those New Yorkers who right now are working one to two jobs, who don't have access to insurance through employer, guess what? You got to choose between whether you're going to put food on the table and access to a decent health insurance benefit that gives you the coverage you need. And that, I fear, is going to lead to millions of Americans losing insurance and millions of Americans foregoing even the most basic of treatments that really will meet their needs and the needs of their families.
But do you think New York could do Romney Care, a version of that? Because Obamacare essentially started in Massachusetts under former Republican Governor Mitt Romney. I mean, could New York go it alone and set up that kind of system? And is that something that you guys talk about that's under consideration?
To my friends who are supporters of single payer initiatives, whether it's here in New York or nationally, what I always say to them is that while the Affordable Care Act has its flaws and there are things we should always be looking to do to improve it, the challenge is what is awful about what's now being contemplated in Washington is that our ability to operate any sort of healthcare system that's efficient, single payer or otherwise, would be so severely limited if we lost all of that money. $8 to $9 billion a year less money. That is less money that we would not have the capacity to extend the service to the 19 and a half million Americans, or 19 and a half million New Yorkers who live in our state.
But Massachusetts didn't have that money when they started. They somehow worked it out and became a model. I mean, couldn't New York do that?
But what I'm saying, though, is at the end of the day, Massachusetts enacted Romney Care in an environment where they didn't have the big cuts that they are facing today. Massachusetts, like us, will be in the same situation. They'll have a very hard time, almost impossible time, trying to maintain what they already have. And that's, you know, and without that federal assistance, with the federal government practicing this form of legislative violence on states, of taking away access to these services and this financial support, and really what to do, give it to a bunch of rich people and corporations? You know, tanning salon owners are not going to be better off thanks to the acts of Congress, and it's just going to make it all the more difficult for states to go it alone.
Now, I want to ask you about, it's kind of a side issue with all this, but it's certainly something that has gotten your boss, Governor Cuomo, fired up, and that's the Collins-Faso Amendment, named after two congressmen, Chris Collins and John Faso, who want the state to take over county Medicaid costs. Now, that's been talked about for a while in New York State as maybe a logical thing, that the state should cover that instead of county taxpayers. But you don't think that's a good idea. Why?
So it's sort of an accident of history that we have the financing system that we have for Medicaid.
Yeah, and quite complicated, and everybody has their share they got
to
pay.
Goes back to the 1960s. When Governor Rockefeller launched the program and said that they thought that counties should be a contributor, mostly to try to limit the benefit to the city of New York, where most of the people were assumed to be in need of the program. And so here we are, in 2017, and it looks like a system that doesn't make a lot of sense. And we have tried, and the governor has led the effort to reduce the county share, but still, it's $2.3 billion in the system. And basically, what this Collins Faso amendment would do is just rip the rug out from under the program with no replacement strategy for that lost federal money county money.
It wouldn't give the state the money to do this. It would be the state would have to come up with the money. Somewhere.
Yeah, the way I view it is that it's just, and what's so awful about it is that it's a total self-inflicted gunshot wound to the New York healthcare system brought about by two of our own members of Congress. We're the only state that has this provision applied. Now, fortunately for us, the parliamentarian in the United States Senate felt that it was a provision that directed only at one state and therefore under their own rules was not allowed. So as a result, the Senate will not be voting on a provision, any version that will include the Collins Faso amendment.
But it's still, it's not dead, right?
No, I mean, it's still out
there. It's something that's going to be out there and it's all very uncertain. Well, thanks for talking to us and filling us in at kind of an uncertain time. Nobody knows what's going to happen next. I wish you could offer us a good word for the ending, but it doesn't sound like you really can. So.
No, I'm pleased to be here. And obviously that as we watch the events this week and in the weeks to come, I just hope that cooler heads prevail eventually and that we actually end up having a conversation about what we can do to make the healthcare system better for people, as opposed to talking about how we can destroy it.
Okay, well, thanks very much. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
And that leads us to this week's New York Now poll question. Do you want to see Congress repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act? As always, let us know by logging on to our website. There's the address, nynow.org. You can also view any of our past programs over the last 7 years and follow links to us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, where our handle is @nynow_PBS. There is also a link to the Times Union's Capital Confidential blog, found also at timesunion.com. All right, Karen joins us now at the news desk. And Karen, since we did our interview with Jason Helgerson, of course, it was 48 hours before the final attempt in the U.S. Senate to pass a skinny repeal of the ACA.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad that I went through all the scenarios
that's
with
right.
him because we didn't know which one would be live. And honestly, we still don't know. I mean, we've seen the ACA repeal attempt be dead before and then rise again. I mean, this time it seems like it's dead, but there's been at least two other times that that's happened. One thing that kind of shocked me in the interview, though, is I always kind of thought New York State could go it alone at some point, like Romney Care, mm-hmm, like Massachusetts mm-hmm. started. And I was kind of shocked that Helgerson said, well, no, we really can't. If we have these big of Medicaid cuts, we're just not going to be able to do that. So I thought that was kind of sobering.
What's going to be interesting is to see, we were talking last week because at that point, Congressman John Faso, mm-hmm. who of course was one of the architects of the Faso-Collins Amendment that would, that mm-hmm. Helgerson spoke about, was saying that, look, the only path forward on a comprehensive bill is going to be bipartisanship. And that is now what Chuck Schumer, who really gets his first big win as minority leader in the Senate, is saying is going to be the only path forward.
Let's discuss some infrastructure issues. The MTA, Andrew Cuomo, Bill de Blasio, the governor announced Thursday that there was money for MTA Chairman Joe Loda's new plan to upgrade the subway system, which would cost around $836 million. This brought some back and forth that we were very familiar with between mm-hmm. Andrew Cuomo and Bill de Blasio.
I guess that's an example of intra-party fighting, right? Yep. We talked about it last week on the show. They're still fighting over who's to blame for the MTA, who should pay. Bill de Blasio again brought up Cuomo's light show on the bridges that in retrospect was kind of a mistake. He made such a big deal about mm-hmm. this light show with music.
Right.
Meanwhile, people
don't
are like...
Don't use MTA money, please.
Yeah, that people are not, able to get on their trains and it's crowded and the trains are braking and they're walking through the tunnels in the dark. So it was kind of a miscalculation on Cuomo's part, I think.
The governor's attempt last week to sort of put this all off on the city and send mm-hmm. Loda out there to say, well, the city owns the transit authority. Mm-hmm. What can we do? that backfired.
Big
I think
time.
People saw that as blame shifting of the purest Ray Serene. There was another poll from Quinnipiac out this week that found that among respondents who are unhappy with subway service, by a 2-1 margin, they blame the governor more than they blame Mayor Bill de Blasio, 40% to 21%.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be going away for him.
And boy, if you look at, I know Twitter can be a negative place, as we know, but boy, if you look at the responses to any Governor Cuomo tweets, people are just rallying against the terrible subway service in New York City.
And Cuomo seems to be kind of flailing around. He mentioned Con Ed again in his speech at the breakfast meeting, that Con Ed is to blame because they're not fixing power outages quick enough. He even started blaming the federal government for that.
It really goes to a problem that we have spoken about involving the governor over and over again. Nothing is ever his fault, ever.
Yeah. Casey wrote an excellent column on that.
Although if it goes well, he takes credit for it, right? He caused the good outcomes, but not the bad ones.
I did only
do that so long.
I did write my Sunday column about that sort of that condition that the governor seems to suffer from. The interesting thing is I didn't get a call from the administration angry at me, which tends to be unique. And it's a sign of how much they just had bigger fish to fry, I think, between health care and other transit issues.
All right, maybe they thought you were right.
Or maybe they just lost my phone number. I'm not sure.
At the Association for a Better New York event yesterday, the governor announced that the first span of the Tappan Zee Bridge will open on August 25th. Some good news, but that also brought up the question, how are we going to pay for this after the tollway freeze ends in 2020?
Interesting that it was the GOP party chair, Ed Cox, who asked that question. Cuomo gave a partial answer. He said all the tolls across the thruway, all the toll payers are going to pay for the bridge, which was new. He's been pretty secretive about exactly how this bridge is going to be financed and our toll's going to go up. They're frozen until 2020, but they can't be frozen forever, so there's been lots of speculation how much will the toll be on the bridge. We know more about what the bridge is going to be named, the Mario Cuomo Bridge, than we do exactly about how we're going to pay for it.
And Casey, that brought up the theme that we've seen for years and years, the upstate, downstate divide.
Yeah, because once again, you saw groups like Unshackle Upstate, a fiscally conservative upstate pro-development group, saying, are you kidding me? Are you telling me now that that commuters out in Buffalo, you know, anybody who's you know, driving the thruway in perpetuity is in fact going to end up paying for this pleasant travel across the new Tappan Zee, the Mario Cuomo Bridge.
The governor yesterday also asking for federal help for another major infrastructure project. Let's take a look.
Our next priority is the Gateway Project. As you heard, it is probably the most critical infrastructure project on the East Coast. It's the tunnels that go from Jersey to New York, but they bring all the rail that goes to the Northeast. 17% of the entire country population.
The governor saying the state will commit $5 billion. It's already committed to this $20 billion project. But that kind of led to another conversation that we've had, and lots of people have written about it and reported stories on it, how Andrew Cuomo deals with Donald Trump. Mm. And that is sometimes, or a lot of times,
Donald
he doesn't
who?
Even say his name.
Who?
Yeah.
Somebody who's president, the Trump administration, the White House,
Washington.
He doesn't like to say Trump's name. Obviously, he doesn't want to pick a personal fight with the guy right now because he sees where that gets you, which is essentially nowhere.
Yeah, that's exactly what the governor said, that when you're dealing with somebody who you have to cooperate with to get what you want, it's not good to engage in ad hominem attacks.
Right.
Implicit in that is, as opposed to somebody who you can kind of kick around and get away with, like Bill de Blasio, that's okay. You can do that
and
all you want.
And I guess he's still hoping he's going to get that infrastructure money, although, you know, they haven't even been able to do health care, and infrastructure's down on the priorities, so.
It really is.
Who knows
if that's tax cuts are supposedly next, we'll see.
But I think he's still hoping. He doesn't want to create an enemy yet, although that has caused some concern among the left in New York State and the left in his party that he will not take on Trump.
On the military transgender ban, he did finally sort of go over that line and kind of tag it to President Trump.
But he did say Trump administration. He never said President Trump, even in that case.
All right, well, let's, before we go to our poll question results from last week, our friend John Campbell often asks the question, where does upstate New York begin? Maybe we have to modify that to, where does upper New York begin?
Yeah, the President Donald Trump, in announcing that Foxconn, the huge Chinese cell phone manufacturer, would open a factory in Wisconsin, said, well, you know, if people want to leave areas that are failing, such as Upper New York, to come work for factories like this, they should just do that. Which, Upper New York?
Right, and where does Upper New York begin? Maybe I-84, that's my guess.
Yeah, okay.
All right, before we go, we want to talk about last week's poll question. Let's reveal the results. The question was, would you like to see Andrew Cuomo run for a third term as governor? Lots of votes, three quarters said no. Don from the Flower City of Rochester, watching on WXXI, told us, I'm hoping not to have to vote for him again. I'm a Democrat who voted for Teachout in the primary.
Joanne in Smithtown, watching on WLIW, a supporter of the governor, said Andrew Cuomo took New York State from the brink of financial disaster, and he continues to deliver on-time budgets.
Jonathan from Angelica, watching on WNED in Western New York, had a kind of a different opinion, saying he is a political Machiavellian who has supported his corporate donors over the welfare of the people. He should have been voted out in 2014. And finally, Kathleen in New York City, watching on WNET, voted no. He has not run the MTA properly. The subways are constantly breaking down.
A theme we've already talked about. All right, before we go, we have a new podcast up. Our two interns, Sam and Jackie, took battle against one another. Andrew Cuomo succeeded this person when he became governor.
It was the guy who was he's blind in one eye, right?
You can listen in at nynow.org or download it wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't worry, we went easy on them.
Unlike Ken Lovett and I,
that's
in the
right.
First throwdown. Oh my goodness,
all
trauma.
Right. That's going to do it for us this week. For Casey and Karen, I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation.